Wild Bill and Calamity Jane are here, and now so are you. From Deadwood, South Dakota, this is the Real Deadwood Podcast with Paul Dennis.
Hi everyone, this is Paul Dennis speaking to you from the Real Deadwood in the Black Hills of South Dakota. And this is episode 11 of the Real Deadwood Podcast, a variety show from the Real Deadwood for fans of the award-winning HBO Deadwood series all over the world, combining interviews, entertainment, and news from both Deadwoods. Now, before I get into telling you what all we have coming up in the show, let me just tell you about the incredible weekend I've just had. We just had the Deadwood Shootout Poker Tournament, and Earl Brown, who plays Dan Doherty, and Robin Weigert, who plays Calamity Jane, were here in town, and I kind of got to hang with them for a good bit of the weekend. And I got some interviews with them and some video clips of the interviews, as well as plenty of video clips of them in poker action. Now, Earl didn't have a real good streak of luck, and unfortunately what happened to him was he kind of didn't pay attention to his cards, and he'll be the first to admit that. In fact, he did admit that to some on some TV interviews and stuff. He looked at his cards, and he thought he had a 7 and a 4, and then the cards came up on the table, and a pair of 4s came up. So here he's thinking he's got 3 4s, and he's betting the ranch, and this is like right at the very beginning of the tournament. And somebody calls him, and he flips over his cards, and guess what? He had a 7 and a 3, not a 4. So he pretty much lost his bundle there right at the outset and was eliminated. However, Robin, who has won some celebrity poker championships in the past, made it all the way to the second to final round. So she played through all the rounds on Saturday, and then she played through the rounds on Sunday up until the very second to last round. And so out of 184 players who had signed up for the tournament, the final 10 players made it into the final table to play for the championship, and Robin came in 12th out of 184. So she missed out by about 2 places being in the finals. But she did fantastic. And I talked to a number of the players. There was kind of a reception on Saturday night. And a bunch of these good old boy poker player guys came down and were sitting at my table. They'd sit down and I didn't know who they were or anything. I'd say, "So did you win or lose?" And the one guy goes, "Well, Calamity Jane, she took all my money." And he goes, "Well, she's not all that good." And I go, "Yeah, but she took your money, didn't she?" He goes, "Well, yeah." So these guys, it was a little bit of sour grapes there that they got beat, not only by that it was Calamity Jane, but just being beat, I think, by a woman didn't sit well with these good old boys who pride themselves on being, these hardcore poker dudes. So it was fantastic to see Robin do so well. And so like I said, I went to her hotel room Sunday night. And she agreed to, do an interview. And so we sat down on this little couch there in the hotel room, and I turned on the video recorder, and we shot about a half an hour of my talking to her about her background, her past, her upbringing, what got her interested in acting to begin with. And then you'll hear the phone ring, and then that was Earl up at his room. He was up on the fourth floor, and she says, "Come on down, Paul's here." And so he comes down and sits on the couch, and we sort of continue our track of talking about acting, and he's talking about his early days of acting and stage play. So it's incredible. You will love this. And when I look at it myself, I can't believe I was actually there with them and that this whole thing happened. So we do have the Sirius Satellite, part 2 of the Sirius Satellite show that the handful there of the actors did. And then there's also going to be a part 3. So it'll be a couple of podcasts yet before I edit and put together the interviews that I did with Robin and Earl. And but hopefully I'll get some of the video clips up there fairly soon so you can see what happened there during the interviews. Let me tell you about the rest of today's show. And as I said, we're going to have the cast of Deadwood, who appeared on Sirius Satellite Radio, a show called Outlaw 36. And it's John Hawks, who plays Saul Starr, Earl Brown, who plays Dan Doherty, Paula Malcolmson, who plays Trixie, Sean Bridgers, who plays Johnny Burns, and Dayton Callie, who plays Charlie Utter. Now, they were the guest DJs for the day, And they did play some music and stuff, and so, but I don't have the music. I left that part out. And so really what you just hear is they're talking between the music. So you may hear them introduce a song and say, here's a song by so-and-so, and then the next thing is, and that was a song by whoever. So you'll be expecting that, but that's what we had in the last one, and that's what we're going to have in the next podcast too. So we're going to start off with that, and then right after that we'll have a conversation with my wife Mary, who's the director of the Adams Museum and House, suppliers to David Milch and HBO of primary research for about 3 years now. We'll be talking about George Hurst, who made his entrance into the storyline at the end of last season, season two, and who, according to what I heard from Robin here this weekend, is going to be heavily featured starting out here in season three, which will be starting on June the 11th. So we'll be talking about him. And then after that, I have part two of my interview with Marilee Rush, the Angel of the Morning, when she appeared here for Cool Deadwood Nights back in August. And we'll be talking a little bit about her early roots in music. After that, we will have my son Alex, who was a tour guide at Mount Moriah Cemetery last summer. And we'll be talking about a person who's well-known in these parts, almost as notorious as Wild Bill and Calamity Jane, but is not nearly as well-known, you know, on a national basis. And his name is Potato Creek Johnny. He was a guy that was about 4'11". He came here very towards the end of the Gold Rush, and sort of became a legend in his own time, and Alex will tell you a little bit about him. After that, we will have part two of my interview with Hank Harris, who is a local Black Hills musician here, who collaborated with my wife Mary on a CD called Deadwood Songbook. He did some research to find out what was the music being played in the early days of Deadwood, and we'll have another tune from the CD, and we'll hear some more from Hank. After that, I'm going to tell you how you can win a fantastic HBO Deadwood mug. Compliments of John Rizzo, who is the Emmy Award-winning head of the makeup department for HBO Deadwood. And every year they put together a little commemorative mug and hand them out to their friends. And he sent us a couple of them. And so you will love to win this HBO Deadwood mug. And I will tell you exactly how you may be the one to do that. After that, I've got some listener feedback and some emails and some people to talk about and thank. And so let's get things started here because we've got a lot to cover. And here we go with the HBO Deadwood cast on Sirius Satellite Radio, Outlaw 36.
And this first song is by Townes Van Zandt and Tecumseh Valley.
An amazing song.
We'll open your mouth and say something we can't fucking understand.
I'm thirsty.
Lie on your back, take aim, and piss.
Starting tomorrow morning, I will offer a personal $50 bounty for every decapitated head of as many of these godless heathen cocksuckers as anyone can bring in tomorrow with no upper limit.
That's all I say on that subject. Chick Nets rounds on the house.
God rest the souls of that poor family.
Mm-hmm. And pussy's half price. Next 15 minutes.
You're listening to Sirius Radio. This is Outlaw 36, and that was the great Ian McShane, a Golden Globe winner, in the role of Al Swearengen for the HBO show Deadwood. Now, if you like that little snippet of dialogue, there's that and more and some great tunes on the Deadwood soundtrack that you can find with Lost Highway.
Ian was going to be here with us today, but due to his vacation plans changing, he's down on a beach in Mexico with his toes in the sand and a big old bubbly glass of Diet Coke.
Poor guy.
Suffering down in Los Cabos.
Los Cabos?
Is that where he is?
Yeah. He told me I didn't have enough money to go there, so he said you could stay at Los Crapos. It's right down the street.
It's a good thing you've named where he's at, because everybody in the Southern Hemisphere that watches our show and has this radio station is now headed there. No, I'm going to find Al Swearengen and that goater out here on the beach.
He's only staying 4 days, so he'll be gone. He'll be out of there.
Well, we've had whiskey songs. We've had songs about gold and mining, and we've had songs about women prostitutes. And now you total those things,
you come to a logical conclusion. That is a recipe for murder.
Which leads us to our next block of songs.
Mm-hmm. Now this is Johnny Paycheck, I've Got Someone to Kill.
Unless you want to sit down here and bust my fucking balls.
Hey, you're with the cast of Deadwood, and it's Outlaw 36. You just heard a bunch of killing songs?
They were about spurned lovers seeking revenge.
Yeah, Trixie thought about killing Al for about 5 seconds.
Well, you did kill that guy in our very first episode. You shot him through the head.
He wasn't my lover. He was a trick.
Your lover's right over here.
Yes, he is. Well, my Jewish lover.
That's right.
Across the room.
Songs about murder, songs about whiskeys, whores, gold. Hell, that sounds like...
Outlaws.
Outlaw country.
I want to be an outlaw.
You are an outlaw.
They have all the fun. Outlaws have fun.
This is my favorite one. This is Steve Earle.
Ooh, he's good.
Sound like you're up Schitt's Creek.
People angry at their difficulties often act like fucking idiots.
Once again, you're listening to the cast of Deadwood on Sirius Radio. And that last song was, well, Road Goes On Forever.
And the party never ends. That sounds like a philosophy of life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Nietzsche said that. No, wait, no, it wasn't Nietzsche. It was Confucius.
Confucius.
Really?
Sean, it was Robert Earl Keane. He wrote the song. Joe Ely sang the song. Robert Earl Keane wrote it.
Yeah, but Confucius said it you first. Guys, they stole it.
Confucius is Mr. Wu's favorite friend who's going to show up in Deadwood anytime soon.
Yeah,
I think.
Season 3.
Who came first, Wu or Confucius?
Wu.
Wu did?
That's a profound question, my friend.
Let's hear a little Wu, huh?
Oh, don't you country people know any happy songs? Huh? Everything's so sad here.
Let's remedy that.
And who don't confuse himself or sitting in judgment with our Lord in fucking heaven.
Bach, why lowly cock sucker.
Yeah, glad I taught you that fucking word. These are whites, huh?
White cock sucker.
Two white cocksuckers killed him and stole the dope that he was bringing to you.
White cocksucker! You, Swidgen!
The dope that you were gonna fucking sell to me?
White cocksucker!
These two white cocksuckers? Who the fuck did it?
Who?
Who, you ignorant fucking chink?
Who?
Who? Who stole the fucking dope?
Cocksucker!
And that was Tanya Watts. My friend, she's from Alabama, but she makes her country music right here in Los Angeles, California, where we, the cast of Deadwood, now have our homes.
That's right, and that would segue beautifully into the shameless self-promotion segment of our show. Oh, because just for you listeners out there, I heard a couple great bands.
Where?
At the House of Blues in Los Angeles on the Sunset Boulevard.
I was there.
Yeah, two great bands, King Straggler. Led by our very own John Hawks.
I'm just one of the boys.
Uh-huh. And Sacred Cowboy, led by Earl Brown.
Since it is time for shameless self-promotion, those two bands are going to be playing June the 18th and 19th in the city of Deadwood, South Dakota for their Wild Bill Hickok days.
It's still a little tentative, Earl, but it's looking mighty good.
Yeah. Looks like we're going to be opening for Big and Rich, if it all works out.
Let's play them, shit.
We already did.
Oh, hell.
So it's our turn to play. See, they open for us in this radio show.
That's the way it ought to be.
Now, at the time that this show was recorded, this was previous to last summer, when Earl's band, Sacred Cowboys, and John's band, King Straggler, both appeared here in the Real Deadwood for Wild Bill Days, and as you hear them talking about on that show, they opened for Big and Rich. Now, they will be here again this summer for Wild Bill Days, June 21st, 22nd, and 23rd. And Earl just has a big movie that he's going to be working on, so that's about the only appearance he's going to be able to make here in Deadwood, as opposed to last year when they, you know, the whole cast was able to come out here, 11 of the cast. And according to Earl, John this will be a stop on their tour, on the King Straggler tour. So they won't be able to stick around for too long either. And while they're here, John and King Straggler will also be doing a fundraiser at the Adams Museum and doing a performance there too. So they will actually be doing the same thing that you hear them talking about last summer. They'll be doing that same thing this summer. My next guest is my wife, Mary, who's the director of Deadwood's Adams Museum and House. And we're going to be talking a little bit about George Hurst and Homestake Mine. So here we go with Mary.
George Hurst is the one who purchased the homestake from Mose and Fred Manuel, and Moe's Manuel is featured in the show. The story is different. What happened in real life is different than what's depicted on the show.
In the show, the one brother kills the other brother, right?
Right.
And, so that he can accept the money from Walcott, the offer.
Right, right. And actually what happened is that didn't happen. Moe's did not kill his brother, Fred. The Manuel brothers came out here very early in 1874, and they joined up with Hank Harney, who, for people that know the Black Hills area, Harney Peak is named for Hank Harney. Anyway, they were prospecting around Custer, didn't really like what they saw. Then they started moving progressively toward the northern Black Hills, and eventually laid claim on, if my memory serves me correctly, April 9th, 1876, they laid claim to what they called the home stake, and that was truly the mother lode. The following year,
and the home stake's located where for our
that's
listeners?
In that's in Lead, which is 3 miles.
It's actually 3 miles south in the north south direction, but it's straight up practically
right.
from Deadwood.
Yeah.
So it's up. Yeah. It's what they call it a mile high. It's 5,280 feet mm-hmm. high. Deadwood's what in the 3,000s. Is it as an elevation? Something like that. So, yeah, it goes up another 2,000 feet, and then they dig down. What?
It's actually, when they ended, they were at the 8,000 level.
Okay. 8,000 feet.
8,000 feet.
Which is, what, a mile and a half.
Yeah, which is just, it's phenomenal. It became, the price of gold in 2001 was significantly less than it is in 2006, and it just was not possible to keep the mine operation going. But anyway, back to the whole history. The Manuel brothers ended up selling the home stake to Ludwig Kellogg. And in the HBO Deadwood series, that the person who is George Hurst's front man is Francis Wolcott. In actuality, the real person for George Hurst was Ludwig Kellogg, and he came in and he bought up the home stake for $70,000. And in 1877, then George Hurst shows up. People were in absolute awe of this man. He was pretty eccentric. The newspapers loved to report about how his clothes were shoddy, and he was a millionaire, multimillionaire, and considered one of the most successful mining magnates of the time. And
well, they talk in the show that he had just come from, was it Nevada or Arizona?
Yeah,
or?
Comstock.
Okay.
It's Comstock. And he had interests all in gold all over the place. And let's see, I think the Native Americans referred to him as Boy the Earth Talks To. And that's the title of the last episode of the season. That's mm-hmm. when Gerald McRaney gets introduced in the show. In any event, Hurst was here for several years, on and off. He would come and go. His main office was located in San Francisco. And, but he was such a character. He liked bourbon, he liked poker, and he loved chewing tobacco. And so the newspapers were always kind of making fun of him that he wasn't exactly, the cleanest person.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't as high class as you might think someone in that
position would be. He was kind of a man of the people. In fact, one of the things that he learned to do when he was in Deadwood was bullwhacking. And he said that he was really proud of that accomplishment, being able to be a bullwhacker.
Some interesting information about George Hurst. And we will be continuing this conversation in the next Real Deadwood podcast and talk some more about the Homestake Mine and George Hurst. Next up is a little medley, as usual, of tunes from my musical guest. So listen to this music, and I'm sure you're going to recognize who it is.
In my
And that, of course, is Marilee Rush, the Angel of the Morning, and here is part two of my interview with her.
And when I was in around 1962, I actually started in 1960 working in a rock band for music, but then we went to a rhythm and blues band. Mm-hmm. Where I got my rhythm and blues roots. And that was a great period because between 62 and 65, once the Beatles came in, it started killing the R&B, the real R&B.
Even though they played a lot of sort of like R&B, Little Richard, you know, they seemed to copy a good bit of R&B in their early days.
But they did. I didn't think they did. I didn't think they did a very good job of it.
They
because we were really
it up a little bit.
We were into the real thing.
Yeah. Like Pat Boone whitened up a lot. A lot of his hits were whitened up versions of
so
black
artists.
So I was
not a fan of the Beatles when they came in because of what happened to rhythm and blues once they came in.
But yet it was the British, Eric Clapton and some of them, that fed blues back to us. That when they discovered a lot of the black blues artists and stuff that weren't making it here, and then kind of rocketized it to some degree, and then all of a sudden everyone was like, "Well, where'd you get that? All those black people, black blues artists that are right there in your country." And then there was that big resurgence of the black artists. All of a sudden, had careers where they were completely ignored until the British.
Yeah, and those were connoisseurs. Clapton, I mean, these were connoisseurs, and he replicated it. The Beatles didn't.
Right.
The Beatles.
They did
whiteified it.
They did like their parents' version of it or something to some degree.
Yeah.
Know?
So I just didn't relate to the Beatles at all until until they started doing drugs, and then they really made some
then
great
they got
music.
Cool.
They made great music once they started taking drugs.
Lucy in the Sky. Well, did you, so you started out playing the piano. Did you play an instrument in the bands you were in, or were you just singing?
I was a keyboard player I was a keyboard player the whole entire 60s.
Did you play a farfisa?
At one time I did because we had to travel to Alaska and I bought one just to go to Alaska. Uh-huh. But we used a cut down, for years and years, we used a cut down Model D Hammond church organ.
Cool.
And
with a Leslie?
With a Leslie.
Sweet.
Yeah, it was a pain in the butt.
Tell me about
the guys
it. I was in a band in New
carry
York
it.
And we practiced in this guy's basement. And we had to carry a Hammond B3 down the stairs the basement and then the guy's Leslie cabinet. We were like, can't you just get a little slab? Oh, no, I'm a purist. I got
to
play this Hammond B3.
No, and you
B3.
Had to have a Leslie to get that sound. You couldn't get it. No,
I have it on my computer now. I have a module that does the Leslie sound on my computer, but back in those days,
Well, now they can get that. But back then you couldn't. The Model D church organ had draw bars on it, and there was one drawbar that gave you something like
Yeah, the vibrato thing. Yeah, what that didn't match the horn spinning around.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. And that did it, you know, for later when we didn't want to carry the whole Leslie, and we went electronic. So in the late 60s, I was associated with Paul Revere and the Raiders, and Vox was backing them, supporting them. And so we got a bunch of Vox stuff.
Cool.
Not that Vox had a great sound, but
free, what do you want?
For the period, for what we were doing, we're doing a little, you know, English rock.
Well, the
rock,
Beatles used their amps, and that was a big promo thing too. Kids that were in bands, everybody wanted to play a Hofner bass like McCartney. Everybody wanted to play, you know, whatever a Rickenbacker like, you know, like John, and everybody. And they had the Vox amps and everything. So
it was a glorified Farfisa as far as I was concerned.
Yeah, that's that whole incense and peppermint sound I always think of when I think of a Farfisa. That little kind of.
Twinkie, but we just played the pop music what they wanted, and we had a great teenage dance circuit in the Northwest for so long, and then it ended in the 70s. It ended in 1970, and I had to go into club work, and I did Vegas, and I really hated that scene. It was a grind because in Vegas you would do a show. Joe Gersio put together a show for me. And it was the same thing every set, every night.
Yeah.
And just, you had to have a lobotomy to do this.
Well, it's like you get Elvisitized, you know. He was so great until he started doing that stuff and became just kind of a lounge.
Yeah, and that was Joe Gersio who put that show together for him. Mm-hmm. And it was very formulated. And it worked, but there was no creativity. Yeah. There was
no spontaneity.
No free flow.
Yeah.
Just the same thing, so I really hated that. And then I was in clubs for 15 years and became asthmatic, inhaling everybody's smoke, and really disliked that scene.
Mm-hmm.
But we played big rock rooms, so it was okay because we got to play as loud as we wanted in most cases.
What a nice lady, Merrily Rush. And don't forget, on the next Real Deadwood podcast, you'll be hearing part 3 of the interview with Merrily Rush.
Hi, this is Robin Weigert. I play Calamity Jane on HBO's Deadwood, and you are listening to the Real Deadwood podcast with Paul Dennis.
And now it's time for our Sound Seeing Mount Moriah tour with Alex, and he's going to be telling you all about Potato Creek Johnny, so here we go.
While Bill is facing John Parrott here, a.k.a. Potato Creek Johnny, Potato Creek Johnny was an immigrant from Wales who came over in 1883, decided he was going to do a little bit of mining. He stood about 4'3", so we also like to joke that he too was standing up in his grave, because he would probably fit there. But he stood about 4'3", came out here to do a little bit of mining, really kind of missed the beginning of the gold rush, but it really didn't discourage him. One day he was out in Potato Creek panning and stumbled across a gold nugget. That was 7 3/4 troy ounces, was about as long as my thumb and twice as round, and was in the shape of a woman's leg. So I guess reportedly he was spent the rest of his life searching for the rest of her. My kind of guy, you know, why not? He never had his nuggets stolen. W.E. Adams, before Potato Creek Johnny died, purchased his gold nugget for about $350. There was a replica on display, again, at the Adams Museum, if you guys want to go over there and check that out. So he never really had it stolen or anything. I guess they felt that it would...
on display. It's usually locked
I said away. A replica is on display there.
No, the real one was on display now, isn't it?
No. Oh, that was only for the 75th anniversary. It was on display for one night, but not anymore. Right, yeah. Okay. We had guards. But anyway, so it's over there. Potato Creek Johnny also, I guess, kind of knew how to work his nugget, so to speak. He would stand out in front of bars, and whenever tourists would walk by, this was during the time when cameras were becoming popular, moving picture was becoming popular. They do have records of him, pictures and moving film of Potato Creek Johnny. And he used to stand out in front of bars whenever a tourist would walk by and ask if they could get their picture taken with him. He'd say, "Yeah, but only if you buy me a shot of whiskey." So as you can imagine, 90 degrees, you're standing outside, you're drinking nothing but shots of whiskey all day for pictures, you're probably going to get pretty trashed, you're not going to be too stable. But he did come equipped with a designated driver. He would then tie himself to his mule, Sophie, who would in turn walk him back to his cabin in the woods, so he would never drive drunk. Good motto for today. I also used to tie his nugget up in a handkerchief with seven knots and walk into a bar and make a deal with the people in the bar. Hey, for every knot I untie, someone in here should buy me a shot of whiskey. And so seven shots later, everybody oohs and ahs. He ties up his nugget, walks on into the next bar, and as you can imagine, hey, once again, Potato Creek Johnny is in a layered grave, but there's like two people buried there, and I think one of them is overlapping him, but he's all the way in the back there. They just put the marker down here so it's easier to see. Huh. So that's like, I mean, he's not like directly in front of us underneath Mills there at all. So that's what he's doing back there.
And some more great information from Alex about another one of Deadwood's colorful characters from the past. Now we're going to hear some music from a local Black Hills artist here, and this is off the Deadwood Songbook.
Well, John Henry said to his captain, a man was a natural man. For let that steam drip beat me down, die with a hammer in my hand. Yeah, die with a hammer in my hand. Captain says to John Henry, gonna bring me a steam drill around. Bring that steam drill out on the job. I'll whoop that steel on down. I'm gonna whoop that steel on down. John Henry says to his captain, bring me a 12-pound hammer round. 12-pound hammer with a 4-foot handle. Beat your steam drill down. I'm gonna beat your steam drill down. John Henry says to a shaker, boy, why don't you sing? Throw 12 pounds from my hips on down. Listen to the cold steel ring. Won't you listen to the cold steel ring? John Henry went down to the railroad with a 12-pound hammer by his side. He walked down the track and he never came back. He laid down his hammer and died. Yeah, he laid down his hammer and he died. Oh, John Henry. John Henry had a baby. He held him in the palm of his hand. The last words I heard the poor boy say, you be a steel jiving man. Yeah, you be a steel jiving man. John Henry had a little woman. Her name was Polly Ann. On the day John Henry, he dropped dead. Polly Ann drove steel like a man. Yeah, Polly drove that steel like a man. John Henry had another woman. The dress that she wore was brown. The last words I heard the poor girl say, going where my man went down. Yeah, I'm going where my man went down. John Henry had another woman. The dress that she wore was blue. The last thing I heard the poor girl say, John Henry, I've been true to you. John Henry, I've been true to you. Where'd you get that dress? Where'd you get those shoes so fine? Got that dress from a railroad man. Shoes from a driver in a mine. Shoes from a driver in a mine.
And some nice music there from my next guest, local Black Hills artist Hank Harris. And here's part two of my interview with him.
So now, the last couple episodes, I played a couple of cuts now from Deadwood's songbook. And why don't you tell our listeners how that sort of came about? My wife, Mary, kind of commissioned this as an Adams Museum project, or?
Well, about 3 years ago, Mary, through Kate that works up there, they were having a writer's day. And that's when I met you. And right. That's when she invited me up to do that.
Yep.
And through that, I got to know her, and you guys got to hear me, and didn't think I was too bad. And then about a year after that, my girlfriend Susan and I put together a Bear Butte photography show that we showed down in Rapid City, and then I asked Mary if we could show it up here, and she said, "Yeah, I think it would fit at the museum well."
So was that something you picked up on your own too, photography, or?
Yeah, yeah. Then while I was doing that, I noticed something odd about the Adams Museum. It seemed like the people that worked there enjoyed it. Daryl was having a great time. He just went on and on about how fun it was to work there, and Arlette and everybody.
Daryl Nelson, we're talking about, who has taught art at the college level in the past, and who is the exhibit designer and stuff there.
Yep.
Arlette Hansen is the curator. She keeps, she's in charge of all the historic photographs and that kind of stuff, right?
Right. And Kate Bentham, who I knew before, and she's the marketer. Worked up there and enjoyed it. And I was just like, you know, I'm getting a little tired of playing certain bars. Mm-hmm. And I did go to BH and studied commercial art over there for a couple, 3 years. Mm-hmm. So I was just kind of like, you know, it'd be neat if I had something else to do. I'm going to take Mary out to lunch and see if she has some place there as an assistant something or other, curator or something, and see if she just has something I can do just to just fulfill a little more than just playing in a smoky bar or casino, you know?
So the commercial art thing, you were thinking maybe doing some kind of a design or more a visual arts kind of a thing, basically.
Yes,
and you mentioned BH, of course, that's Black Hill State University where I teach. So let's make sure our listeners all over the world hear that and get a plug in for the school.
Go BH. Go. Is it the Hornets? No.
Nope. Close. It's a nasty, stinging insect. It's Yellow Jackets.
I knew it was some kind of, insect.
Okay. So anyway, in this conversation with her.
So she said, no, Hank, let me think about this. And about a month later, she called and said, how about if I try to get you a grant researching the music that went through Deadwood from about 1875 to the early 1900s? And then you can make a CD out of that, too. And I was like.
You said, nah, I'd just rather be some dead-end drawing job. No.
That's right. No, I want to do ads for Safeway. You know? That's what I want to do.
Yeah.
So anyway, I said, well, sure, if you can pull that off, that would be interesting. And to my great surprise, she actually got the grant.
And she's good at that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then it was time for me to go to work and learn how to be an archivist.
Mm-hmm.
So with a little bit of help from Jerry Bryant over there and talking to other people at the museum and getting a library card up at the Deadwood Library so I could go in there and look at the microfilm stuff from the old newspapers.
Yep.
And learning how to go online and go to the state archives and find stuff there. And the old-fashioned way, too, I'd get books out of the library and read them.
Cool.
And I
assume you got your internet hooked up. I know at one point you were having difficulty with that.
I did.
No one could figure it out or whatever.
Oh, yeah. It's probably me. I'm still no genius when it comes
to
computers.
Huh?
Yeah, right. I'm pretty analog.
I
got it enough to where I could do the work and find out stuff that I needed to know. And it ended up being a lot more interesting and fun than I really knew what to think, really.
So basically it's been like 3 years in the making, you would say?
I would say two or three, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, you recorded it on your DAT machine at home there? Or
no DATs.
Mm-hmm.
No, it was it's an analog machine. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's a 12-track analog machine.
Cool.
An old Akai.
Mm-hmm.
And
then let's see, it was mastered all locally and stuff, or?
I had my friend Jimmy Goings from California, who is an old friend of mine from Sioux Falls. Mm-hmm. He used to be the lead singer in Santa Esmeralda back in the 70s.
Wow.
An old disco band, and Jimmy's a very, very good ear, golden-eared guy. And so I flew him in to do the mixing here, and then he took it back out to California, and it was mastered there by he and a friend of mine out there named Rainer Gimbalchik.
Easy for you to say.
I know. From Berlin, Germany.
Cool.
And Rainer's, his main expertise is mostly symphony music and mm-hmm. acoustic stuff, so he fit into this well.
Now, the other musicians on this are?
Ricky Jacobson from Leeds, South Dakota.
On keyboards?
Keyboards, accordion, and he plays a little jug on there, too.
Mm-hmm.
And Kenny Putnam, mm-hmm. who plays, he played his regular fiddle, and then he got into the spirit of it. And when Kenny used to play with me in Red Willow Band, and mm-hmm. also used to play with Roy Clark.
Mm-hmm.
And when he was overseas, he got this little thing called a banjolin in Scotland,
yep.
which has a small banjo body and a mandolin neck.
Mm-hmm.
And then he also had a 140-year-old Russian fiddle,
wow.
which sounded very much like that era.
Mm-hmm.
Little squawk ear, you know, not quite so smooth, but probably right. more accurate yep. as far as what it would have sounded like yep. back then.
Authentic, yeah, that's cool.
So we tried to at least enter the spirit of the times.
Mm-hmm. And next time we'll have part 3 of my interview with Hank Harris, and we'll hear some more music from the Deadwood Songbook. Now it's time to find out how you can win the HBO Deadwood mug for your coffee, your tea, your hot chocolate, whatever it is you drink from a mug. And I'm going to tell you the rules of the contest. Now here's how it's going to work. In order to enter the contest to win the mug, you need to go to the Real Deadwood Podcast website at realdeadwoodpodcast.com. In the upper right-hand corner, you will see a link that says to click here to vote for the Real Deadwood Podcast at Podcast Alley. Now, I've been asking for the last couple of podcasts for people to go there and please vote for us to go ahead and spread the word to more and more listeners. And some of you have done that, and but what we need is we need a whole lot more. So I've decided to tie this contest in with voting. Now here's what has to happen. You have to go and click the where it says click to vote for the Real Deadwood Podcast at Podcast Alley. That will then take you to a page on the Podcast Alley website. Then you need to give your email address so that they can send you a confirmation email. This prevents automated programs from stuffing the ballot box and going in there and voting for various podcasts, you know, sort of in an unfair way. So this way it requires a human being to actually respond to the email so that it's a legitimate vote. Now, when you receive their confirmation email from Podcast Alley, and it's going to say, thank you for voting, please click this link and the vote will be official, you need to forward me that email to realdeadwoodpodcast@gmail.com. Now, of course, you'll also need to click the link in that email so that the vote counts. But, you know, whatever email address you give at the time that you click, you know, vote for Real Deadwood Podcast, and then you go to that address and you check your email, and there's the email there from Podcast Alley with the verification link. Go ahead and forward that email to realdeadwoodpodcast@gmail.com, and then that's your entry into the contest. Now, the podcasts have been running just about every 2 weeks, so with this announcement today, that will be 2 weeks worth of voting until the next podcast, and then I'm going to announce the same contest on the next podcast, and then that will be 2 more weeks. So pretty much 4 weeks worth of voting to give plenty of people a chance to enter. So if this is episode number 11, and then during episode number 12, we'll still have the same contest going, so new people can vote. And then episode number 13, approximately a month from now, is when I will announce the winner of the mug. So get your vote in to Podcast Alley for the Real Deadwood Podcast, and forward me your confirmation email, and that will be your entry into the contest to win this cool mug. Now, a couple weeks ago, I was checking my website statistics, and I can see in there where people have come from just before they come to the Real Deadwood Podcast website. It tells me it's what they call a referral. And I noticed that someone had visited the website from a website that I didn't recognize. And so when I went to check it out and see what it was, it was a blog from a woman named Laura Petix, or Petix possibly, P-E-T-I-X. Her blog is called Anti-Linear Brain,
And she had a posting that said, "It's Thursday, and I am in love with John Hawks' band song, A Good Man. Charmed. I heard it on the Real Deadwood podcast a few hours ago, parentheses, episode 2. And then she has a link there to the Real Deadwood podcast. So I like to get with people who link to me and kind of link back to them, you know. And so I sent her an email and I said, "Hi, Laura. In checking my website stats, I came across your visit. Thanks. And don't forget to check out the other King Straggler clips on the video clips page." And then I said, "Make sure you subscribe. Are you a fan of HBO Deadwood?" And then she wrote back and said, "I've only listened to 2 episodes of the podcast so far, but I'm really enjoying it. I did check out the King Straggler clips too, and they are great. A Good Man almost seems like it's in character as Saul Starr. Your website is just full of interesting stuff. And yes, I am subscribed to your podcast. I've been holding back on listening to the episodes because I don't want to spoil myself, as I haven't seen the 2nd season yet. Are they safe to listen to for someone who's only seen the 1st season? Thanks for the great podcast. It's very well done, and you are a fantastic host with an excellent voice." Well, I don't know about that, but I do appreciate nice comments like that. Anyway, and then I emailed her back, and I said, "I think it's safe for you to listen, even if you haven't seen the 2nd season. I may talk about a scene or 2 that you won't recognize yet, but it won't spoil anything for you." And then she talked about seeing the episodes multiple times. I said, "As for multiple viewing, that my wife and I, we look at them at least 3 times a piece because we sort of TiVo each episode as it comes out, so we can figure out what Milch is trying to say and figure out what's going on." And then during the visiting actors press conference last June, Jim Beaver, who plays Ellsworth, said he watches it with the captions on because he can't always figure out what's going on either. So anyway, I just wanted to give a shout out on the show to Laura Pedix, or Pedix. I'm not sure how she says that. Maybe she'll email me back and describe the pronunciation of her name. And then I also want to actually give a shout out to Jim Beaver, and also to the Deadwood blog. I mentioned them earlier on in one of the podcasts. It's deadwood.blog.com. And that is a blog that's maintained by some of the background actors from HBO Deadwood, the guys you see walking in the background on each shot, leading horses and carrying torches and pretending to buy things and stuff in the background, guys with beards, you know, and that look the part and everything. They like to show up on the days that they shoot, and they get put into makeup and put into costumes. And I almost got to do that myself, but I kind of missed out when we were out there visiting the set. But anyway, I had seen a post on the Deadwood blog there that was talking about that Jim Beaver, who plays Ellsworth, had written on his MySpace page about a little bit about the rap party, WRAP party, which is the party they the crew and the cast have when the shooting is over for the season. And so I said, "Gosh, I didn't realize that that Jim Beaver was into the whole MySpace scene." So I went over to his website, and sure enough, he's got a pretty neat MySpace page going on. And you can find a link to that on the Real Deadwood podcast links page. And then I noticed that a friend of his on MySpace is a woman named Leah Savoli, and she plays one of the prostitutes, one of Al Swearingen's girls. And you can see her in various scenes. There was in one episode where Earl, as Dan Doherty, beats up Hawkeye as Hawkeye. She's the one sitting at the table just before Earl comes over and starts giving Hawkeye a bunch of grief and looks for an excuse to beat him up. So anyway, I emailed her and I said, "You know what? I would kind of like to interview you for the show because I want not only the big stars, but I want in addition to the makeup, we're going to talk to John Rizzo at some point. We're going to talk to hopefully talk to Michael Kelly, who's one of the art directors, and I've already offered a number of the background players on the Deadwood blog and said, you know what, let's get together and do some interviews." So I did email her and say, "I'd like to interview you for the show." And she's been nice enough to email me back a couple of times and listen to the show. And so it looks like I'll be setting something up with Leah down the road, too. Well, everybody, another episode comes to an end. Thank you again so much for being with me this time. Make sure you're with me next time for the Real Deadwood podcast, episode number 12.
Now, I would like to invite you to participate actively in the Real Deadwood podcast, not just listening, but actually getting involved. And there are three ways we can do that. Number one, you can leave me an audio feedback. You can actually be on the show. All you have to do is install Skype, skype.com. Download it from there. It's a free download. Over 70 million people are using this program now to have free long distance from continent to continent, from one end of the country to the other. And you can do the same. Once you've installed it, search for Real Deadwood Podcast in the contacts area. You click a little icon of a telephone, and that rings my computer here in the Real Deadwood, South Dakota. If I'm here and I'm online, we can talk back and forth and you can actually be on the show. If I'm not here, though, I have a voicemail set up where you can leave, I think, up to 10 minutes worth of chatter. So go ahead and tell me what you think about the show. Tell us your comments and your suggestions and just, you know, just say hi. And the very best ones we will play here on the show. Now, number two way to be involved with the show would be to send me some feedback. And that would be either from the feedback page on the Real Deadwood Podcast website, or just send me an email with your regular email program to realdeadwoodpodcast@gmail.com. Now, the third way that you can be a part of the Real Deadwood Podcast would be to go to the main page. And right underneath the link that says vote for the Real Deadwood Podcast at Podcast Alley, which of course you're going to do so you can win the prize in the contest, there's another link there that says participate in our listener survey. That would be a great way for you to give your opinions about the show and really tell us what you think. So, to all the fans of both Deadwoods in over 50 countries around the world, from the Real Deadwood in the Black Hills of South Dakota, this is Paul Dennis wishing you all the best.